to have any of those C-word qualities, really, you had to have gotten it from a relationship. So if you didn't get it from a good parent, then you got it from your therapist or you got it from your spouse. Or it's not inherent in us, in other words.
Okay.
And here I was working with people that had horrible, horrible childhoods. And as we got their protectors to relax in open space, it was the same damn self that would show up with these same great qualities. And that blew my mind at first. I really couldn't believe it. And then I had some students that said, well, yeah, there's no real analogs to this in psychology, but maybe it's like Buddha nature in Buddhism, or maybe it's like Atman in Hinduism, or maybe it's, and so on, Christ consciousness or something. And so I began to look into that. And at the time, as I said, I came from a non-spiritual place growing up in my family, but that piqued my interest. And lo and behold, a lot of different spiritual traditions describe this state the same way I was and had different methods for achieving it, for getting to it. And it seemed that I had just stumbled onto a very quick way to access it, encouraging parts of open space inside. And it didn't involve years of meditation or, you know, all the kinds of practices. It was pretty simple, really. So that's the way I see self now, that it is the equivalent. Actually, I co-authored a book on this topic where we looked at each spiritual tradition and could make the connection that way, that it really is that in us. I've always liked the idea from quantum physics that photons are both a particle and a wave.
Yes.
And so for me, there is this sort of wave state of self that we meditate to get to, or we take psychedelics and we enter where there's really no boundaries and no body, and you're just connected to everything, and it's blissful. And then as the psychedelic wears off or you stop the meditation, you come back, you think, oh no, I've got this body again, and I've got, there's this time thing I got to deal with. And so you're particleizing. It's the same self, but it's become separate in a sense inside this body. So that's the way I see it now.
What was this like for you as an avowed atheist all along the way and a scientist to then discover data or phenomena that maybe you had to go into a spiritual realm of interpretation? Do you remember your resistance or your acceptance, or how did you come around to saying, okay, look what I have here?
I was quite confused and resistant, but I can't say I was an avowed atheist. I was a kind of non-spiritual agnostic and trying to be very scientific. And one of the gifts my father gave me, he gave me some burdens, but one of the gifts he gave me was this idea that you follow the data, even if it takes you far outside your paradigm. Like a good scientist. That's what was happening to me. It was, you know, I couldn't explain it, but there it was. It was the data, not just in one client, but in many, many different clients. And so I had to start to come up with a way to explain it that didn't involve attachment theory. And that's what got me far more into spirituality.
And I like that you're referencing this other book. I'm really looking forward to reading it someday. But is it true that you'll look at different traditions and find the analogy and the commonalities between them, the similarities rather than the differences is the focus?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And the similarities to what I'm calling self. Yeah.
To what you're naming self with the essential qualities that you've just named with the eight C's, as you call them.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering if you could tell a story of maybe how not only your life, but how maybe a client's life has changed once they started accepting this self and these more spiritual qualities or essential qualities became available to them? What are some of the transformations that you've seen?
Yeah, so not only did their symptoms kind of vanish, but they become, one of the goals, there are four goals of IFS. One is helping these parts transform from their extreme states into who they're designed to be, which is always valuable. The second goal is to help parts come to trust self as a leader inside and outside. And as people achieve that goal more and more, and they lead their external life from those eight C's, and they actually separate more from the parts that were driving them. You know, I talked earlier about the corporate executives who were so dependent on these driven parts, but many, many people have parts that they have assumed was who they were,
right?
That have taken them in extreme directions. And as they separate from those parts and they access more self, and they see with the clarity of self, not only do they see injustice more that they had been ignoring and denying in their families or in the world in general, and become more motivated, they have the courage of self to actually act to change that. And these days, we'll talk about this later maybe, but I'm working with a lot of very high-level social activists, so they do their activism from a self-led place.
Some activists really can be coming more from a protector place or a reactionary place, exactly. And not necessarily from a contributing or contribution place. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes. Many activists are dominated by very righteous, kind of judgmental, protective parts, and they just generate polarization.
Right.
And if you come from those C-word qualities, people tend to start to listen more because self is contagious in that sense.
Right.
If I'm in self, it's going to pull for yourself.
I feel that just talking with you today in our dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense that even you talked about in the corporate setting, but even if you're an activist working for transformation in the world, that you don't lose that ability to contribute and to make change, even while it's coming from a more essential place in yourself.
That's right. And then you also, again, as you separate from some of these dominating parts and you access more self, you become much more interested in rest, for example, or playfulness with, in my case, grandkids, or...
Okay, yeah.
You know, you're just interested in things that you weren't that interested in before. And you spend, you make space for that in your life. So, for example, we've done a lot of work with medical symptoms. In particular, like our big outcome study was with rheumatoid arthritis. So okay. A lot of autoimmune kind of things. And what we found was the study was done at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And so there were 30 Irish Catholic mothers, basically, who were dominated by these caretaking parts that never let them take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as we had them focus on the arthritis and get curious about it, they heard from the parts that wanted them to have more of a life and wanted access to... wanted them to assert themselves more and so on, and hated the dominating caretaking part. And so we're going to cripple them to keep them from being able to keep doing it or just trying to get their attention through the pain. And as we work that out, that polarization, their arthritis got a lot better. But I've also worked where the polarization is between that dominating driven part who's working all the time and then the parts that want to have more of a life. So I'm not sure why I got on that track.
Well, for me, as I hear this, I'm wondering, are you so explicit with them as during the medical study that what you're helping them get in contact with is a self or is a spiritual principle? How explicit are you to each client that comes to you for transformation?
In the beginning, not so much. I mean, because like we were talking about parts can freak people out. So
yes.
So I'm just saying, okay, you've got this arthritis. Would you be open to just asking the pain some questions? And most people say, oh, okay, I'll try it if you think it works. So
okay,
that's how we would start. Just focus on the pain and see if you get all the parts that hate it to step back and just ask what it wants you to know and wait for the answer. So something as simple as that.
Right. And would they also then bring you the data you talked about with your dad, that they're feeling more restful or more confident about themselves, even though it was a so-called medical issue versus something just strictly psychological or trauma-based?
Yeah, as we would, you know, as we would do the work, and particularly as we would get the pain parts to talk to the caretaking part, for example, at some point I become more explicit about what we're doing and how to do it on their own, because it's one thing to do it in a session, but we give a lot of homework so that people can do a lot of this work on their own by themselves. And to do that, we have to kind of explain why they should do it. And so at some point, we're introducing the concepts far more.
It comes back to that essential component that you're talking about of the curiosity.
Yep. That's right.
Right. To first, maybe if a client doesn't have that, to help them instill that in them, to get them there so that then they can start being curious about their own parts.
Yeah. And instill it in them is not the language we use, because it's in there. It's uncovering it. It's not something you have to instill. And that goes for compassion too. You know, a lot of spiritual traditions talk about how you got to build up the muscle of compassion. No, you don't have to build it up. It's in there. You just have to release it.
I'm speaking with Richard Schwartz, author of No Bad Parts. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Richard Schwartz. He's the author of No Bad Parts. Dick, in the last segment, we were talking a bit about working with some caretakers. And I'm wondering, as people are getting in touch with the parts, if shame comes up for them and how we work with shame.
Yeah, shame is pretty ubiquitous in clients. And for me, as a combination, there's this critic we've already talked about who says shaming things. And then there's a part who believes the critic. Your critic says you're worthless. And that goes right to the heart of the part that believes you're worthless, which is usually what we call an exile, like a young, vulnerable part that stuck back in this time when you were a child and were given that message by some other person and has held that all this time. And so that's why shame from an external critic or an internal critic is so potent, because that exile can just light up your body and it can overwhelm you with how worthless you are.
You have an exercise or something that our listeners might be able to do themselves if they feel the shame arising in them?
Yeah, and there are such exercises in the book you've mentioned. But yeah, so if I were leading it, I would just have you start with the critic, because it's touchier to start with the exile, and find it in your body, and then notice how you feel toward that critic. And it's likely you've got a lot of attitude toward it, so we get all those parts to give you a chance to just get curious about it. So we ask them to open a lot of space inside and access that self-curiosity. And then begin asking the critic, what's afraid would happen? That's a really good question for these protectors. What's it afraid would happen if it didn't shame you all the time? And again, there are standard answers to that question, and generally, they're all protective. I mean, at first, the part might say, well, I do it because you are. You're an idiot. You're a jerk. You're bad. But if you stay with it and persist, where did you get that belief? The part will share where it got that idea. And we didn't mention yet this concept of legacy burdens. So
okay,
a lot of these beliefs about ourselves and these parts that carry those didn't come from our direct experience in our personal lives. They're coming down through generations of people that carry these beliefs. We then absorb. And so a lot of times if you ask the critic, do you carry somebody else's energy? They say, yeah, it's my father's voice. I'm using that all the time. Do you like having to carry his voice? Do you like having to carry his energy? No, but I didn't think I had a choice. Would you like to unburden that legacy burden? And a lot of times they want to. So shame is a big one. It's behind a lot of symptoms.
These are really powerful questions. And even if you're just asking them, we're not doing the exercise here, but I can feel them working within me and the curiosity and spaciousness happening. In the book, you also write about how we can invite more spaciousness into our life, create more space to participate in these dialogues with our parts. And you mentioned both meditation, but also medication as two different trailheads for this work.
Yeah, like a lot of people are anti-medication and think you should be able to do everything without it. And I come from this medical family, so I couldn't fit in the family very well if I took that position. And I also don't believe it. I believe that medication can be very helpful to deal with some kind of a symptom initially. It's not a good answer in the long term, but many clients I've worked with, if we can calm down the symptom that's driving them crazy, it's much easier to work with their other parts. We can do that initially. Whereas if I'm trying to work with their parts and yet their symptom is still going in a big way, they're constantly focused on that.
Great. And so I'm wondering, as you've been exploring these different ways to access self, where you see the vision of IFS contributing to the larger transformation in the world on a larger scene than just the personal?
Yeah. You know, when I ran into self initially, and then through trial and error found that it was in everybody, there was a moment where I thought, this is amazing. If everybody knew this, and they knew these parts were what they seemed, and they knew they could actually transform these parts this quickly, that would change everything. You know, I was in my mid to late 30s at the time, and I was quite immature, as many people would attest. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if the person who could take this where it's supposed to go would come along, because I'm just a little kid. But turns out I'm the one I've been waiting for. I've over all these years, had to reconcile that, yes, I can bring this. And So we are actively trying to not just have it in psychotherapy, but, for example, have it become the map to the psychedelic territory. People, I'll give you one example of a guy named Bill Isaacs, who's bringing elements of it to depolarizing the World Bank and the IMF so that they become more self-led and make better decisions. And
So he's working with the leaders of the World Bank.
He's working with the staff and the board to try and depolarize. And then he's working with the leaders to, you know, help them make more self-led decisions. So, yeah, it's seeping into larger institutions, and that's where my energy is going now.
That is such a fantastic contribution to what the world needs now. And for those of our listeners who may feel that they do have something to contribute, but are hitting that point that you may have felt when you were talking about in your 30s, who am I to do this? Well, I'm the one that I've been waiting for. What was that wrestling like within yourself?
It's still happening.
It still happens. That's actually really nice to hear too.
Yeah. I mean, even doing this show, you know, for me, so there are parts of me that, why does he want to listen to me? You know, that's, I still have some parts.
Yeah.
They think the model is great, but they're also, you know, you're not going to articulate it right and all of that. So I'm quite relieved at this point because I feel like I've done pretty well. I've had to do that work over and over. Like, there were some key exiles that I could unburden pretty early because, you know, I went through all of college assiduously avoiding any class where I'd have to do an oral presentation because I was so afraid to talk like this in public. So just to get on this path of becoming a leader, I had to do a lot of work with those exiles and their worthlessness and their fear of making mistakes and so on. And so now I can get up in front of a group of therapists and I do fine and I don't have to work that much. But doing this where it's kind of a new arena for me, those same parts still come up with their same fears, and they're much easier to reassure now, and they step out much more quickly, but it's still around.
I'm so happy to hear that. That to me is actually more inspiring to hear that you got it all taken care of in your 30s, but that it's still here today, even just for this conversation that I am also enjoying very much. And also have a part of me that's a bit nervous too. So, but ultimately we both made it to the interview today and brought these four. Now there's one thing we haven't hit exactly yet. There are the 8 C's, of course, but then you also have the 5 P's that kind of represent qualities of the self. And I just thought we could end today on those 5.
Yeah, these are more of the way self acts in the world, which includes patience and persistence. And that combination is actually very powerful, patient persistence. And that, you know, is what got me to this point. And then presence, which is what we're calling self and self energy.
And is there something pointing to embodiment as we say presence too?
Yeah. We'll all have parts that will keep us less than present in our bodies for protective reasons. And, you know, if, like me playing football, there was a part that they feel protective of self. So they separate me a little bit from my body. And it took them a while to trust it was safe to let me come back in. So there's the presence of self. And there's playfulness, which is kind of a natural part of. And what's the last one?
Perspective.
Perspective, which is sort of the IFS perspective, that these are just parts. They're not terrible symptoms, and they all hate their roles. They would love to get out of their roles and do something they'd much prefer.
The transformation that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly didn't expect that we would start and end with the football when I was getting ready for this interview in our exploration of consciousness and what we're doing here as human beings today. But I've certainly enjoyed bringing that part in as well. I've been speaking with Richard Schwartz, author of No Bad Parts. If you want to learn more about his work, go to ifs-institute.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Severa. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3806.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.